1984 has been a tough year. Our sales are down, our growth is down.
Sonny, I brought you in here to grow the basketball business.
People don't know what the hell a Nike is.
What's a Converse?
NBA All-Star shoe.
There's nothing cool about Nike.
You would have to have a pretty compelling pitch.
I can tell them the one thing the other companies can't compete with. Our basketball division is terrible.
I do not love it.
This is where you come up with a brilliant idea that no one else can see. Let's hear it.
I got it.
I found him.
Who's that? Jesus?
Can't afford it.
I'm willing to bet my career on one guy.
My name's Sonny Vaccaro. I'm with Nike.
Do you typically make it a habit of showing up at people's front doors unannounced?
I don't like to take no for an answer.
Oh, man. Da, 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 da,
da, da! You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world gone crazy!
Are you serious?
Ladies and gentlemen! Yeah.
It's showtime.
We take a break from the spring and early summer blockbusters of 2023. For an early dad movie of the year candidate, it's Matt Damon, it's Ben Affleck, it's off-screen Michael Jordan, it's Air. I'm your host, Brian Gill, joined as always by my illustrious and just incredible co-host, Kent Gearson.
Thanks.
And Richard Barton.
Oh, that was just for Kent. Just
yeah,
the illustrious
you know.
And incredible was for Kent, and then...
and then this guy.
Hard yeah. Semicolon and Richard Barton.
Also in attendance,
yeah,
Richard Barton.
Got it.
Yeah.
I'm the only person here that's not a dad, but this is a big year for dad movies. A lot of contenders for dad movie of the year already on the docket. We got this one. We got Indiana Jones, Mission Impossible coming out soon.
Yeah.
It's going to be big.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. John Wick with cool dads, you know? I mean, it's,
Tried to get my dad into John Wick. He still hasn't seen him. I'm like, I've been telling him for years. I'm like, man, you'd really enjoy these. And he's like, yeah, I know. And he just never has. Still hasn't.
I get that. We went to Lindsay's aunt's house for Easter, and her aunt is like a. It's fine. It's fine. It's share more off the air. But no, it was totally fine. But her aunt is like a very well put together, like psychologist, like counselor, like all this stuff, and they immediately were like, have you seen John Wick 4? We saw it. It was awesome. We loved it so much. It's like, oh good okay. For look at you guys. You guys party. I like it. So, yeah. This one's going to be tough to top, though, from a dad movie standpoint, I feel like.
Not since Ford v. Ferrari.
Yeah, seriously.
Or maybe that one where Greyhound.
Greyhound was on demand, like, though.
Yeah, true.
I don't know. Top Gun Maverick felt like the dad movie of all time.
Yeah. I feel like Top Gun Maverick.
It broke out of just the dad.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It was too big to be a dad movie.
It definitely satisfied the dad quotient.
Yes.
That's for sure.
Yes.
But like it also had a broader appeal. So yeah,
it worked for everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah. It worked for everybody.
Everyone was a dad that day. When they saw Top
Gun.
We're
all dads.
Yeah. 13-year-old girls were like, today I am dad.
Yeah.
I'll fly that jet to Mach 10, baby. What's wrong?
Right. Julianne Moore is a mother to us all, but on this day, yeah, we are a father
exactly.
to all.
She's
a,
yeah, so. Absolutely.
If
she
Sunday
be,
was
she'd
any
be
indication.
Great in Top Gun 3 if they can't get Connelly.
Yeah. Yeah.
She needs one of those. She's been doing too many downer movies. We need like a Julianne Moore and a Top Gun.
Sure. I'd be down. Go ahead, Kent.
If Sunday was any indication, this one's going to do well for a while. This one's been out for a long time. In my theater was completely sold out.
Wow.
Like a random 3 o'clock on a Sunday.
Well, that is prime time for dad.
That is.
That's
exactly.
7:30 on a Friday for dad.
And this thing's 4 weeks old. This thing's going to dad so hard. And it already is.
Yeah, it does go to Amazon soon, though, I think, because it's Amazon Studios. So that might. But true, will dads know how to get it? So they might just keep going to the theater. I don't know.
It's true. You better pounce on this now, dads. We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. What's going to happen from here? My screening was pretty full too. I had a couple of friends who were like, "Hey, I want to go see that." None of the theaters near us had a screening that was at a good dad time for us. It was like, I need post bedtime, but not 10:30 at night.
Right.
So I ended up seeing 8:45
to 9:30.
Yeah, something in that sweet spot would be great. And
Dad o'clock.
Couldn't get one of those times. So I ended up seeing, but I too had a pretty full theater. There was
Can you guys have two showings a day, 8:45 at night and 5:45 in the morning? Because that would be ideal. One of those two would be great
right,
for me.
Right. This 10:30 thing, not great, to be honest.
Literally, you can have the whole afternoon to yourself. But I need to either roll in here, I'll scan my way in. That's fine. You don't need to have any employees.
That's right. Yeah. Or, you can trust me. I'm a dad. Yeah.
Or 8:45 at night. And that's it.
I'm here to see Air, okay? Like, I'm not going to steal anything. We're going to be fine. It's going to be fine. This movie, let's start talking about the movie, I would say.
Yeah.
The fifth directorial effort of one Ben Affleck. Mm-hmm. It repairs Damon and Affleck. Obviously, they were together for the last duel.
Was that actually last year? Yeah, that's the new Indiana Jones 4.
Okay.
Let's just, you know, not that it's that awful, but like,
right,
this should be the reunion. Let's just pretend that didn't happen.
I like that. We can retcon that. It works for me.
You don't have to say it didn't exist.
Sure.
Just say it came out in 2024. Let's just retcon the date.
No one will know because no one saw the movie. And no
exactly.
One will
in 20 years, we'll be like, oh yeah, that's right. They did Air and then they got back together for that. That was all right. That last duel movie. And then we're good.
It's good. It's a good point. Kent, general thoughts on Air.
Man, I was looking forward to this one on paper for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
because you're a dad, you don't use a computer.
All you got to do is say sports industry movie, and I'm in. Yeah. I don't care what the subject matter really is. I love sports business type stuff. We, you know, obviously work in it for my 9 to 5, so seeing Hollywood's interpretation of any kind of dabble in this realm always interests me. So you throw Ben Affleck into there, you throw Matt Damon into there. We've got freaking Viola Davis. We got freaking Jason Bateman along for the ride. It's a
Chris
pretty
Tucker,
awesome cast.
After a while, we haven't seen him in a bit.
Yeah.
Chris Tucker, you know, pretty awesome cast. So I was very intrigued. And then I saw the trailer and I was like, oh no.
Awful trailer.
One of the worst trailers. It was it felt like a bad History Channel movie. It felt like the Ashton Kutcher Steve Jobs movie or something like that. Yeah, I was like, totally. I just hope this is not the case. And I saw the reviews. Reviews are good. I go and sit down. I'm hoping for the best. And I love this.
Yeah. Okay.
I gotta admit, I had like some overall issues with the direction, like, you know, obviously that could have been better, I think, but like I had a freaking great time with this. Never once was bored, and it was just people talking in rooms for 2 hours about sports business, and it was so entertaining. Loved it. Thought this was one of the most charismatic, endearing Damon performances in a long time.
That character is not that endearing.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Sandra is like,
yeah.
So, like, that's all Damon.
But you have to be the protagonist in this, you have to sympathize with him somehow. Totally. And for him to do
based
that.
Based on true events. It's not totally true, right? You know, it's like, okay, that's fine.
For sure.
What if Sonny Vaccaro was in a sleazebag?
Right, okay,
now here's our movie.
Right. Yeah.
So, I thought Damon just, there's a few moments in the movie that I was just floored at him. And I thought overall the script was great. I can see why this got made based on the page.
And well, they rewrote
it. There was like three, four moments in the movie that just really hummed.
Sure.
And, you know, maybe stuff in between that was a little rough at times. This is set in the 80s, so you're dealing with that. But I was really impressed with what was on the page. And the performances in this movie were just really outstanding. So that's my general thoughts, Brian.
Okay. But you, Arby.
Yeah. Exact same lead up to Kent. Honestly, but I wouldn't even say I was looking forward to this. I did not know this was a thing until the trailer, I don't think. Maybe just a weird dark spot on my, you know, maybe because I had a kid late last year, like kind of just wasn't as up on stuff.
Regardless of you having a kid last, which you really let us down with that one, but this was a really fast lead up.
Yeah, they it like was shot this it
was
like
yeah, it was announced, it was shot, ago. Here's the trailer, and It felt like a 1 month span in which all
like
of
as soon as they announced that the trailer was out.
Yeah. It was a very quick thing. Yeah, for sure.
Cool story, not just the Michael Jordan part, but this artist equity thing that Damon and Affleck have started, the production business. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw, Kent, the story about the script. So this was a blacklist script.
Yeah, I had heard about that. Yeah, that's how I've been following this.
Yeah.
And seeing, there's this Michael Jordan Nike script out there. I hope it gets made. And I've been following this.
Especially Affleck, they met with Michael Jordan and like the Chris Tucker and Viola Davis characters did not really exist in the script. Mm-hmm. So they met with Michael Jordan. They're like, who were the key people in this story? And he was like, Howard White and my mom. Mm-hmm. And Viola Davis.
To play and George Raveling, the Marlon Wayans character.
And so Affleck went and rewrote the script. I mean, really as like in most things, this would be a co-writer. Mm-hmm. Then they shot the whole thing with the writer on set. And the writer tells this really cool story. It was like, which I love. That was like, I heard this is what happens. You know, you're an F. This was a spec script. You're an F list writer. A couple A list people come in. He was like, they were making all the right decisions, but it was no longer my script. You know, it was like, I get why you're doing this, but this is not what
it had
I wrote.
Written by just him on there.
Well, that's the thing. And so at the very end of the movie, Ben Affleck had a meeting with him. He goes, hey, we're not going to arbitrate this. This is your movie, and people did us a lot of favors when we were on the way up, and we're going to do the same for you. That's and he so came awesome. Out and publicly said it, which is like really cool. So that's like really cool. This is like a Ben Affleck script with like his sort of this guy's kind of partial outline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From what if people even he has said, but it's like really cool that they like took
that's
care of that guy.
Man, Ben Affleck does all the right. I feel like he does all the right, says all the right things publicly. I love that guy.
It was just cool that Affleck and Damon didn't tell that story. Like the right.
Yeah, exactly.
He was
exactly.
like, these guys took care of me. Like they were.
And he knows that like, dude, where I'm at in my career, what is these points going to matter?
Yeah.
In the big grand scheme, but compared to what it's going to matter to this guy.
Exactly.
That is so cool to do. And to even think to do that with all you got going on is amazing.
Cause I think with Good Will Hunting, I mean, I think that's it's not the stupid thing where like Kevin Smith wrote that movie. Like that was the conspiracy theory at the time, but I'm sure they got a ton of notes from people. They talk about Rob Reiner's impact on that script. And you know, it became like a spy drama at one point. If you guys remember Good Will Hunting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And they were just like, no, it should just be the guy. Like, figuring his stuff out. The first act of the movie should be the movie. But it was still an Affleck and Damon script. So I think they remembered that and Affleck paid it forward, you know, just a really classy way. Anyway, I love that story. I think it's really cool. Anyway, the movie, I saw the trailer. I remember sending it to you guys going, woof, but I did make the note. I was like, this.
You did. You were ahead of the.
I don't know if I was ahead. I just took a shot. I was like, this could be a really hard R. And these are the only lines in the movie that are PG, so they put them in the trailer and it's awkward, but I doubt it. I wasn't like sticking to that, but I happened on the 5% get right, and that's totally what it was. It was like
it was just to put the exposition in the trailer, and it was bad exposition at the beginning, and once you get past that, this thing really sailed.
Really did. And those notes from Michael Jordan and the stuff Affleck added around Howard White was great, and all the stuff with Dolores Jordan was awesome. So that's, repeat press tour tidbits, but like Matt Damon's had the great line when Ben Affleck said, he's got one note. He says that, Viola Davis should play his mom. And Matt Damon was on the phone with Affleck and he goes, that's like saying Michael Jordan should be on my basketball team.
Like, that's great. That's a good line. Yeah. Speaking of the press tour, did you hear Chris Tucker and Affleck talking about Chris Tucker? He's like, man, this guy knows everybody.
Yeah.
I called him up. I want you to play this guy, Howard White. He's like, oh, I know Howard. He's like, what? He just knows the amount of the Rolodex.
Yeah.
With Chris Tucker is incredible.
No, absolutely. And this delivered, right. Again, these are the kind of, every once in a while we'll get a comment, which are fair. And then sometimes they're not fair. Where they're going to get on the podcast review or whatever. They're like, these guys all share similar tastes. So it's like, they're not going to argue about stuff. And that's sometimes not true. In this case, it's very true. Like all three of us are very interested in sports business and we all know a lot of these characters and follow this. So like we are definitely in the target audience for this.
For sure.
Yeah. I don't think that matters because I think this movie really executes outside of this. But is one I certainly would have brought pre-kiddo. I would have brought Sarah to because I think she would like it.
Yeah.
I didn't because, you know, someone's got to stay home. But like, I'm interested in like the Sarah test on this because she couldn't care less about this kind of stuff, but I think she'd love it. So
yeah, same. Anyway, I was hoping Lindsay and I would be able to see this together. Same thing. Cause this is a human interest story in a lot of ways,
right.
As much as anything. And like the only thing that Lindsay cares about with sports ever is like Hard Knocks or something like that. And so, this would have, I think probably would have fit the bill, but we couldn't make it work. Yeah. But you're right. Like we are on the target audience for this, but also it's 91 and 98% on Rotten Tomatoes right now. So I don't think that, it's not like, I don't think you have to be too inside to get why this is a good movie and why it's well made. You mentioned it, Ken. It's a lot of people in room talking, and I love that. I like movies like that. I don't know how often spec scripts get made anymore, but it doesn't feel like very often for sure. And it sure was cool to read that story and to hear the way that this was that this guy Alex what's his name Alex Coventry am I let's make sure I'm Convery sorry
Co- Convery, Convery. Yes.
That even he was like, I was hoping that I was gonna get a story by credit. You know, and it turns out how often again do we see a movie that has one writer on it? It's credited anyway, so
and also
it's really cool.
How often do we see a movie like this just go straight to Amazon Prime?
Yeah, for sure.
This was theatrical only for over a month is amazing. Yeah. We always want low budget, smaller, more interesting pop culture type stories to get made. And it's just like, well, the ceiling is too low theatrically for those. And we're like, no, if they're good, I think people will talk about them and see them.
And
this guy kind of proved that.
Well, it's kind of that hybrid model too, right? Like this costs $70 million. That's a lot of money for a 2-hour thing on your streaming platform. But if you could make $50 million of that back, maybe $20 million is not a big, right?
Sure.
Investment for a big tentpole thing that's going to bring a lot of people over to Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
Amazon's interesting because like it's not something that people turn off month to month, right? Because they have the annual model. And it's like some people, you know, they have it with Prime and things like that. So they have a kind of interesting thing. Like they want to have these big tempo releases, but it's not like people go, I'm not going to have Amazon Prime for March because there's nothing else coming on. Like that's kind of an annual decision, mostly based on shipping. So anyway, but that's kind of, but they have made, Amazon Studios made a lot of really good movies. Mm-hmm. And this is a cool one too. So it's interesting that this kind of hybrid model of, we're going to try to make some of this budget back to make it not a stupid decision to then put this on our on our streamer for a few months.
Yeah. In a perfect world, this is a $50 million movie. I think that makes it a huge success kind of thing. And instead, I love the hybrid model too. I'm with you. And obviously, some of the money is spent on the talent. They've got Chris Messina is the seventh. Not that Chris Messina is like a huge household name or something, but that could have very easily been.
He's not scale.
Yeah, exactly. Could have been scale actor really easily.
Did you see they went over on three things? They went over on cast. They went over on. They were actually production, shot so fast.
Production. Yeah, shot I would say production design is probably over.
Yeah, construction of it, because actually Affleck shot so fast, they couldn't build the sets in time, so they had to work overnight, because they shot this thing in like 24 days.
Right.
And then the third thing was food trucks. That's a company I'd like to work for.
Yeah, there we go. These are our founding principles, and I appreciate that. Yeah.
To Affleck's credit, it was all Duncan. It was all sponsored, so he...
That snack and bacon ain't free, bro.
And all you can eat snack and bacon. Just
God, that Dunkin' commercial with Affleck is great. Yeah.
It is.
I will admit.
They had to help.
When J-Lo pulls up and is like, what are you doing? That's a great bit. Yeah. I will admit.
Yeah. They had to keep the weight on Damon. So I get it. Had to stay.
That was another funny bit that Affleck said. He's like, I only made this so I could put Matt in a fat suit.
It was a strong play. We talked a little bit about the script, which is really interesting, and the production of it. What do we do with Damon? Or no, excuse me. What do we do with Affleck at this point as director?
He's one of my favorite directors. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. Get into it. Let's go. Yeah.
Like he, you know, he has made, I mean, between The Town and Argo and this, like there are other directors that like and obviously like some of the real blue bloods, like really stimulate me more, maybe on the first watch.
Sure.
But like in terms of rewatchability, Affleck's like maybe one of the better working directors these days. Mm-hmm. Like he just maybe he's just making things for my taste, but like he is making things that I want to watch 17 times. Like I've seen The Town so many times.
Yeah.
I wouldn't even consider that like one of my favorite movies, but like I'm always down to like watch it one more time. It's like super watchable to me. Argo, I do think, is one of my favorite movies. I love that movie. Mm-hmm. It's breathless. It's still great. Even though you know what's going to happen, it's so well done. I don't think this is much of a, to Ken's point earlier, like as much of a directorial masterclass as maybe those in Gone Baby Gone, but like, I don't know. It's like also like the fact that if this is going to be his like, you know, curveball that he makes in 24 days and just like is his like, this is just my resume patter. Okay.
Yeah.
You're going to be one of the best directors in the world. Like if this is your, this, I wouldn't say passion project, but this is going to be me hanging out with my friends and making like a good movie. Mm-hmm. Cool. Do one of these every 7 years. I'm in.
Right. Yeah. That's a really good way to put it.
Passion projects.
Right. Yeah. Cause this came about so quickly. I don't know. I mean, that doesn't happen very often either. Like the spec script thing doesn't happen very often anymore.
This was like a very Ron Howard-y movie.
Yeah, like sure.
Ron's kind of lost that pitch a bit. So it's like if Affleck every 5 years wants to try to be, you know, Scorsese, but then in between that, be Ron Howard, cool. Great. Mm-hmm. Here's my money.
Yeah, absolutely.
How involved was the writer in getting Affleck involved? Was he like, when I wrote this for Matt Damon?
No, I think they just bought it. I think they just optioned it.
Okay.
Yeah, he said they had a couple of different options on the table, or offers on the table, I should say, and that
he trusted them
like
the
this
most.
Damon wasn't in it at that point, I don't think, not as the as an actor.
Really? Because he looks so much like Sonny Vaccaro, it's hard to believe.
go look up Sonny Vaccaro if you don't get that joke. or watch Soul Man or whatever on the 30 for 30s. To step in and kind of just do this movie all, not necessarily on the fly. That's giving it a little bit. I mean, this has been in pre-production since at least early 2022, if not late 2021. But still, it almost feels like an old school Hollywood kind of thing of like, well, we have time, so I guess I'll go make a movie.
That's what I mean. It's like that kind of next step. Yeah. Like, I mean, those guys, you know, your PTAs and your Quentin Tarantino's, et cetera, they don't do this as much.
Sure.
You're crazy auteurs, but there is something to be said of like, I'm a professional director.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like, I'm just going to make something good every couple years. And now I will also every once in a while have the thing I really am into. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is that I like totally nurse from the beginning and like make it my thing. But I'm also not going to only work every 6 years. So like halfway in between, I'm going to just make a professional movie.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I feel like that's really a good sign that Affleck may have entered that era of his career, especially with this production company he's got going on, because like, you're not going to have an Argo every 3 years. Like you're just, unless you're a total monster. So, but like the fact that he could have just put this together with this new production company, this Artist Equity thing, shoot it in 27 days, edit it, get it out and get 97 and 91 and make $50 million.
Sure.
Really good sign in terms of quantity for the next few years if he's developed this muscle, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I was listening to the that Fury Road book that you recommended a couple weeks ago, Richard, and George Miller in that book, he complimented like Steven Spielberg and the way that Spielberg is able to do two movies at a time, basically. And how he uses one of those movies to get a break from the other and vice versa, essentially. Like, if I go home, all I'm going to do is think about Schindler's List. But if I go to the set of Jurassic, this is not a quote, obviously, but
I'm not familiar with those two movies, but are you talking about The Post and Ready Player One?
This is what he did exactly with Ready Player One. I mean, with The Post was he found a blacklist script that he really liked and he's like, I got 30 days here. Yeah. And he called up Tom Hanks and Meryl Streep and they were both available and they just
wasn't that kind of, not to compare Affleck to Steven Spielberg, the great director of time, but like that's Catch Me If You Can too, right? It was pretty much that.
Yeah.
It's like, cool, we're going to shoot this in 34 days. Like,
right. Right.
I love that. And I think that's, you know, not to do the like Gladwellian blink thing, but sometimes with stuff like this, don't overthink it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Turn the camera on, get good actors.
Yeah.
Have a decent script. If it's not a good line, rewrite the line with some smart people.
Right.
Shoot it.
Absolutely.
Edit it.
So this
it doesn't all have to be Shakespeare.
Yeah. This was my favorite thing about the direction. Cause I'm with you. Can't, this is not like a masterclass in direction or anything, but it's at best, at worst, it's high quality directing,
yeah.
You know, and all that.
Everything has to be showy either.
It's yeah. Like see, okay. Competent. That's my big point. As I was watching this thing, especially these monologues where I want to talk about Damon in a minute. Cause we all love Damon. Mm. But especially the monologues where Damon is going or the conversations between him and Viola Davis, you get big Oscar vibes. But what this movie, I guess what I'm trying to say is, as I was watching this movie, I'm thinking, this is such a fun, lively movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so glad that they made this as a movie for April or June or something, yeah, instead of a movie for, yes, October, even though that may cost Matt Damon an Oscar at the end, yeah, of all of this, because I think Damon's performance is on that level. But the movie is so much better for kind of avoiding the Oscar buzz and just letting it be a fun, interesting movie with people, like you said, Kent, people in rooms talking, I really appreciate that. I think
it's great that even though it's for screenwriting, it's, mm-hmm, great that Damon got that Oscar early, even though I think he has deserved or may at some day get an actor Oscar. I think for my money, he is the greatest like leading man actor.
Mm.
You know, it's kind of he and Leo one-on-one, but I think I actually credit Damon for doing more stuff because I think that's actually harder.
Yeah.
So I'm a Damon guy, even though obviously Leo's great, but like, it's kind of great. He does he can always say Academy Award winner, Matt Damon, which is so stupid that, mm-hmm, this matters, but like, he doesn't have to Amy Adams it.
Yeah.
Like he can just be like, yeah, I'm just going to be good and stuff. And if you want to release Ford versus Ferrari in September and, sure, release this in April, I'm not chasing it.
Right.
I don't have to do that.
Yeah.
I'm not Joel Embiid. Like I can just do stuff that's good and cool. If I get awarded, great.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't ever feel like he's doing that, which is awesome. Because not even like doting on him, if he didn't have that Goodwill Hunting writing Oscar, even though it's for a different discipline,
mm-hmm, yeah,
I actually feel like he'd chase it more.
For sure. Yeah, he never feels like he's chasing the award, and I love that about him. I mean, and again, I'm with you. I love Leonardo DiCaprio, but like Leo doesn't show up in Eurotrip, you know? And I know that was 20 yeah, plus years ago, so maybe...
Sure.
Maybe Leo would have 20 years ago.
He should win an Oscar for the Kimmel.
Yeah, but he doesn't show up.
They said he almost showed up in This Is the End. Of course he didn't. But
right, right. Awesome. Exactly. You have all the stories about what Leo almost did but didn't instead, mm-hmm, of, or, I mean, instead of being Les Grossman like Tom Hanks, or excuse me, Tom Cruise,
yeah,
in Tropic Thunder. Or,
well, it's not even, you have to do it comedically.
No, for sure, for sure, for sure. But up to The Revenant, I mean, we all, yeah, said post Revenant, like, gosh, now I'm excited to see what Leo, mm-hmm, is going to do, because he's got this off his back and he can,
yeah,
just go. And to me, I think the most fun movie he's ever done is Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. And that's the, yeah, you know, the next thing really that comes after The Revenant. So, yeah, I think you're onto something there. Kent, finish this out with director talk, and then I don't know, we've already sort of verged into Damon, but
yeah,
I love that he decided to play this for an entertaining movie, and we'll just let it speak for itself rather than push this for an October or November release and make it more Oscar-y. Where do you fall on that? Do you think, I mean, are you with me that the vibe would have been totally different if they had decided this is Oscar time and we're going to go for it? I
don't necessarily think they were thinking, let's make this serious Oscar-y or more entertaining. I think they just made what they made. Mm-hmm. And the release happened when it did. So I have a couple things on the direction.
Please.
First of all, one thing I did love was not having Michael Jordan in it at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Showing the back of his head, not making that a thing. Cause that's, people would be thinking, hey, does that look like him? It's just one more thing to add, yes, on.
Yeah.
And for them to realize, I don't know if this was in the script or if Damon I mean, I keep saying Damon when I mean Affleck.
I know. I
get them mixed up. How is that possible? Mm-hmm. Affleck worked out was, hey, this is not Michael Jordan's movie. This is about Nike and this is a bigger thing. And so I quickly realized that that was a stroke of genius on the directorial side, and how so many directors could say, let's go meet Michael. Let's go see what Michael's up to, and focused more on that and his role in all this. But I love the way they played that. Something I didn't love, I mean, my qualms are more on the minor side. Like, I just thought there were so many establishing shots. How many times did they show the Nike building, the Nike logos? It was just a lot on that side. I think could have trimmed that down. He doesn't have like a definable style quality that he brings. Like, I think Affleck brings much more to the table working with actors, writing the script, working that out than he does like what he can see through a camera and what his mind tells him will look the best.
Real fast, I think in hindsight, I'm with you, Richard, and Argo, I think, is an incredible film. I think he was really smart to make Argo when he did, because you go from Gone Baby Gone to The Town. If you do one more Boston-centric movie, you become the Boston director guy. Yeah. And, you know, Argo obviously has nothing to do with that whole setting. And I think you're right, Ken. Now, he doesn't have a definitive a style, a thing that you look for when you go to an Affleck movie. And I think that that is a good thing. I think it makes him, Spielberg's my favorite, and there are definable Spielbergian qualities that you look for in every Spielberg movie and stuff like that. But it's cool to be able to do this too, and just kind of bounce around and do quality. If your calling card is just, I make good movies, except for that one that nobody remembers that I did, then,
which he still maintains is his best, which is a great. I love that take by him.
So funny, It's a.
I guess I get bummed anytime I leave a movie and I'm like, man, that one shot was just awesome. You know, that didn't really happen in this movie.
Yeah,
I think he can have. He'll have that. That's.
I think he does. I think he could have hired Roger Deakins to shoot this, and then we would have had that. You know. I don't think. I think it's more about what this movie was, and that's not. This isn't that kind of movie. You know.
His, you know, Birdman, that's like, oh my god, that guy directed the crap out of that, and it's so good. He obviously has great taste. That seems to be his calling card as a director, right? In terms of, you know, work with, but I do think, great point by you, Kent, like sometimes that does get conflated with like a great cinematographer, especially when it's an actor jumping in directing. They're like, look at that shot, he knew how to do that. Yeah, okay. This isn't that cinematography showing, but like he worked with the crap out of these actors. He really did all this. And this shouldn't be showy. It'd be absurd if he's like Soderberghing all over the spot with this Michael Jordan's mom and Sonny Vaccaro biopic. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like, I think I love the restraint. It's actually a great artistic choice. Now, I'm not saying this is like, whatever, but like this is a real, I'm telling you, this is a great sign that he has this pitch.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah, for sure.
Because he's smart enough. He's going to have the showy directorial thing. I think we got a bit of that with Argo.
Mm-hmm.
But even that was a bit restrained. I think The Town actually is probably his loudest directorial movie.
Yeah.
Live by Night.
That exists, and that's a thing. But he will have, you know, he may have his Interstellar or whatever at some point, but... But I just love that he has this muscle that he can just like, because I think he's someone, not to get into his like personal demons and stuff, that like, but I do think he's someone that likes to be busy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if he can just do this every 18 months, like awesome. And then wait for the when he wants to make his, I don't know, Kevin Millar biopic, that's going to be his passion project. Yeah. It's going to be great. Yeah. Cowboy Up, a Kevin Millar story.
Yeah.
Don't let us get to game 5.
That's right. Let's talk about
one more thing on the direction, Brian.
Please,
Did you guys feel this? I definitely felt this. Did you feel a definable Ted Lasso energy in this movie?
Yeah, look, I think the thing that we are maybe defining as, because I've seen this not just with this movie, with a lot of things recently, and I'm here for it. It's great. I think the thing that we are defining as a Ted Lasso feel is just like positivity. That's it.
Yeah.
It's just, we've gone through a really difficult, awful, dark period of history, and we're still in it. But like
Brian's doing this podcast wearing a mask.
That's right. But like the socioeconomic, political climate that we have been in as of late, and then mixed with the pandemic and all this sort of stuff, and then mixed with even our superhero movies are dark and edgy and all this kind of thing. Ted Lasso comes out and it is a show that is really built on kindness and positivity and heart. When something comes out that does feel light and energetic and positive, this is not just you, kid. This is a societal thing of like, oh, it's very Ted Lasso-y.
Oh, and I mean,
you're not wrong at all. I just mean I think that's just a sign of like, hey, this made me feel good and
positivity is
sure. Yeah. Sure.
I think maybe
Ted Lasso was the first thing that made me feel good for a while, and so now kind of everything is associated with that.
Besides for you, LVT. That's what you call Lars von Trier. But
right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But that's not for everyone. Yeah.
Brian has a parody song. He's like, you down with LVT? Yeah, you know me.
Yes.
Maybe it's some of that. Maybe it's the editing, the way it was shot, the colors. It just reminded me of that. I just felt like I was watching a long Ted Lasso, which is not a bad thing.
When Michael Jordan slaps the believe sign on the way out,
I think it was like the main office in the Nike headquarters reminded me of like the locker room set in Ted Lasso. Sure.
That's interesting. Yeah.
I can see
how they would kind of go into the common area and then go back in the office and come back in the common area. That whole dynamic is probably what triggered it the most for me.
That's fair.
But wanted to get y'all's opinion. Yeah.
I like that.
On that. How did you feel about the tension in the movie? Because this to me is so tough. When you go into a movie knowing how it ends, the audience, we know he gets the shoe deal. We're wearing Jordans to the theater, right? So it's always tough when you know the Titanic A6, sinks, but when you know Apollo 13 is going to crash down in the ocean, right?
Yes.
And to build and to watch those two movies every time and still feel like, oh my God, maybe it doesn't sink. Maybe they missed the iceberg this time. Maybe they don't make it back in Apollo 13. Like I thought, I was like, maybe he does sign with Converse. You know, like I had that thought in the movie and that was amazing.
Yeah, it's really well done on that front. I think that was what I was going to take us to is the story element of that and the way the direction ties into the story and how this plays out. It's very well done on the front. I think that is one of the greatest things you can do in a movie is to create tension and drama out of something that you know the outcome of. And Apollo 13 is an incredible example, maybe the best example in a lot of ways. But this does it too. And manages to get tension both without sacrificing the entertainment value of the movie, but also in a relatively low stakes thing. Like no one's going to die if he goes to sign with Converse or Adidas or whatever else. It's a relatively low stakes affair here. And yet there's a lot of tension there. Bateman brings a lot of that, I think to the forefront. I thought he was sort of a perfect playoff of Matt Damon. Cause he brings Damon with Vaccaro has this like kind of intensity and energy. And, I mean, if you know anything about Sonny Vaccaro, he's an a-hole and that's part of why he is successful. He's tenacious and all this sort of stuff. And then, Rob Strasser, you know, is, as far as history is concerned, is a lesser player in this thing. Bateman's use of, I always comment on Bateman's pauses and the way he's able to kind of go slow on stuff. I think that is just, it was a really great way to emphasize the intensity and the tenacity and whatnot that Damon is bringing as Vaccaro. I love the combo of those two.
When he knocks on his window and just shuts the curtain on him, that was such a funny moment.
Yeah. But like there's not too many, there's maybe three scenes in the movie where it's just the two of them. And those I think are some of the best scenes in the movie because
absolutely
you just have these two guys talking the story, it's not really a monologue, but the dialogue that Strasser has with Vaquero about, like, I think you're a little flippant with this because, like, it may not, you get fired, but, like, I don't get to see my kid.
I need this
kid,
job.
You know? Yeah. I don't see my, I mean, that was like a, whew, okay. Now there's some stakes, you know, that we're adding to a movie that I just said, like, has low stakes. And I thought that was so well done. I love this story. I think anybody who like we said at the outset, we are all sports business dorks that love this stuff. I think Phil Knight's autobiography or business, whatever it is, one of the best of that genre. A few years ago, called Shoe Dog. Great book. And he got into some of this stuff, but this is also kind of this story is kind of the stuff of legend. If you pay attention to this kind of thing, like knowing the history of Jordan with Adidas and the stuff with, they just barely touch on like the Dean Smith, his mom, Dolores, all this kind of stuff. How did you think they handled the story aspect of this, Richard? The historical aspect of it, I guess.
Very well in terms of what they included and more importantly, what they left out.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because there's a lot, you know, this is fine. You don't have to, it's not a 9 episode 30 for 30. Like, you know, to me, it was like the best version. You know, when you, when you're watching the draft and then you flip over to the ABC coverage of the draft and you're like, what the heck is going on with this? It's like all human interest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It was like the better version of that.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. That's a good way to put it. Yeah. I don't know how familiar you are with this backstory and all of this stuff, but I agree. I'm with Richard. I thought that was one of the better parts of it, was just knowing what highlights you need to hit within this story to make this work as a movie without getting into the minutiae that, you know, shoe and sports business dorks like us are gonna be like, yeah, I love this stuff. But making it to where it's something that my dad can go watch because he doesn't really care about that stuff.
You know? There were three things that I kind of wanted this to hit. One, why did Nike decide on Michael Jordan? I think they played that really well. I love the scene in the beginning where they're just throwing out player names. Why this? Why that? That was very Moneyball.
That's a very interesting thing. Yeah, very Moneyball. Great call.
Yeah.
And like, it's obvious to us, it's Michael Jordan, but it's important to get in that thing.
Important to know, like, these are
very
all,
good young player. Yeah.
Could be.
Right.
John Stockton. Nobody's sure about that guy. You know, that was good. Charles Barkley. No one wants to see him on TV. That was a good line, I thought, in the movie.
Yeah.
So I wanted it to hit that. I wanted some background on the design of the Jordan.
Yeah.
On how they made the freaking shoe.
Sure.
That was the one thing that I was like, if they don't cover this, I'll be legit let down. Like, background on the design, why things are the way they were. I thought they nailed that with the comedic element. I thought that was extremely well done. Probably my favorite element of the movie. And then why Jordan picks Nike.
Yeah.
And they nailed that at the end.
For sure.
So I thought it hit all those three things I was looking for.
Yeah, I was really glad they did making Peter Moore, the designer, like an important character in this. I love that. It was something I thought we might, just even for the sake of time and compression, like we might lose that. But focusing so much on the design and the shoe itself, I loved that. I thought that was a great note because for the three of us, at our age, having grown up around sports and stuff like that, genuinely, that's the most important moment in shoe history. From, I don't know, at least from like the Converse All-Star on. Deal. I mean, for what, you know, 40 years from when the Converse All-Star came. I mean, that's a monumental moment in culture, certainly in sneaker culture, but sneaker culture touches so much of the rest of culture now. And that was not that wasn't how it was in 1984, certainly with basketball sneakers. Every basketball shoe that has been designed since 1984 is in some way or another inspired by the Air Jordan. And so I thought that was a really important, especially if you're going to do the Michael Jordan's off screen, we never see his face, which I think was a really smart decision. if you're going to make this about Nike and the shoe, mm-hmm. then make it about the shoe. And they, gosh, they did that very, very well. I think I that was the thing that surprised me the most from this thing was that they really grasped the importance of the shoe, not just the company and not just the person who's in the, that was a really cool note that they spent 5, 10, 15 minutes on that, I think could have gotten forgotten easily in lesser hands.
I thought the line from the designer where he's like, it's like it's always existed was so spot on because that's what good design does. It's like it just comes out of the ether. It's like mm-hmm. it's an iPhone. The iPhone design it always seems so obvious, you know, when a good design comes out. And that's the way the Jordans felt. It's a timeless design. It's still as popular and as cool looking in 2023 as it's ever been.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Talk sure. about the 40 years of like fashion relevancy. Has that yes. ever happened?
It's a remarkable achievement for both form and function, the way that, you know, it's mm-hmm. it's talked about in the movie here. And yeah, I thought that was a really nice stroke.
The stroke of genius too was the them having one shoe in the pitch.
Yeah. Yeah, because it got...
I had no idea about that. It's like, you don't want to give them options. It's one one shoe. Yeah. And that was so... Uh-huh. That's such a sales move that I would have never thought of.
Yeah. Paying the fine was a great, great bit. Yeah. That was a really smart play. Mm-hmm. Historically speaking, that worked out obviously very, very well and helped kind of help create shoe culture again, which is a huge part of this. The acting... And then I don't know how much else I have, and we can get out of here. Damon was incredible. This was Damon is one of those guys now that when you say, oh, that was one of the best performances of his career, you are talking about a lot of very good performances that you are stacking this up against. As I said, I think that if this came out in November and was geared towards Oscars, which it may still, because the best picture winner last year came out in March, you know? So, we may be at a different place and I would love that. I think that would be fantastic. It definitely, if this ends up in the hands of, I don't know, Joe Wright or somebody like that, it's way more melodramatic and it plays to the Oscars, and some of the camera angles would be a little bit different and all that sort of stuff. If this came out in November, I feel like we would definitely be saying that's probably the acting performance of the year. That's at least that's a major contender for best actor. I thought he was great in this movie. Where'd you fall on? Where does this stand as compared to some of the other great moments in his career, Richard?
It's I think it will be paired with Ford v Ferrari as this kind of, even though it was a few years ago, I think that this will be kind of thought of as an era of him as a middle-aged leading man, but with some kind of, you know, a little more, I don't know if it's necessarily his dad movie run or whatever, but I think this will be that. Those two are definitely an era to me.
Sure.
Both I love his performances, both they're very different performances. I guess they're similar in some ways too. He's great. I mean, he hit a rough patch a couple years ago where he had like four bad movies. Mm. And those are literally like the first four bad movies.
Yeah.
Like a 25-year career. Like, that guy was on such an understated heater in terms of picking what to do, because he's big enough where he gets to pick what to do. And his taste in terms of what was good, who he wanted to work with, and he's talked about this. And what he was capable of doing. Cause I don't think, you know, he's not, you know, Daniel Day-Lewis, but he's really good at finding things in his, you know, in his key as an actor that he knows how to sing the parts of. And a lot of that was because, and he's been cool about this. I mean, like, yeah, I got lucky with Bourne, and that just like, I just knew I could take wild swings and do cool movies because every 36 months I could just make a Bourne movie and I'd be fine. And so I think he's had a really interesting career because of the flexibility that afforded him. Obviously, the Bourne well is at least temporarily dry, maybe probably dry forever. Mm-hmm. And he's kind of entered this new phase, and I think it's going to be a little more hit and miss, but those hits will be there because he's awesome. Mm-hmm. And this and Ford v Ferrari are certainly there.
For sure.
I thought one of my favorite scenes in the movie at the beginning. I don't know. I didn't know this part of the story. I'm sure you guys did, about James Worthy.
Yeah.
And that play and him analyzing that play, I thought was, you know, breathtaking. On it is goosebump movie stuff. You know,
that
ruled, was, and him explaining that was just awesome. I love that moment.
I'm glad you brought that up, because just if the listener will allow just like a basketball nerd moment, that was such a fun little, almost an aside, but they build a great scene out of it. But the deal with Jordan was like, there was a running bit when he was in college that like the line was like, the only defense against Michael Jordan is Dean Smith, his coach. Mm-hmm. The only person who's stopping Michael Jordan from scoring 40 is Dean Smith.
Yeah, that was the line.
Cause Dean Smith was just this legendary coach, and he, you know, was, I mean, a Mount Rushmore of college basketball coaches, but also he ran his system, and you better fit his system. And that's kind of the end of it. And that is a huge monumental moment in Michael Jordan's history, in what becomes Michael Jordan, not just Michael Jordan, good basketball player, but Michael Jordan, maybe the best athlete of all, team sport athlete of all time. There's this huge moment in his freshman year when that's exactly what happens. They run, they need a bucket, and they run they have the guy who would be the number one pick in the draft that year. And they run the play for Michael Jordan. Dean Smith runs the play for Michael Jordan. Like, it's a huge, huge thing. And I love building a scene out of that, because it kind of, that's almost like an inside joke for people who really care about basketball and know some of the history of all this stuff. Is like, it's not just Vaccaro breaking down this play. It's like sort of a stand-in for all of the, you add that to like him talking to that cashier at the 7-Eleven and that guy being like, yeah, he's not going to have, he's what, 17 points in college? That's 10 points in the NBA. Like, it's not going to translate. That was a fun, those were fun little Easter eggs almost, which, you know, you don't really get in a movie like this typically, I feel like. But
they weren't too gaggy.
For sure. Kent, yes.
To your point earlier, like, they could have been, that could have been real, like, oh, that's cute, and then eye rolly by the second one.
Yeah.
But they were written and executed really well.
Yeah. I love that.
And the other moment from Damon at the end when he just wings the speech is fantastic as well. And the bit about Phil Knight coming in late and the way they played that was so funny. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. Affleck is, I mean, he's not going to get the props for it, because Matt Damon was awesome. Viola Davis was incredible. Bateman was incredible. I thought Messina as David Falk was really funny too. They used him perfectly, because that guy is one of the world-class D-bags. used him really well. Affleck playing Phil Knight as just a big old dork is great. Like, that was a very funny, that's exactly what it is. You know, it was very good. Very good.
Sometimes
on that
the only director that can direct Ben Affleck is Ben Affleck.
Sure. It's like, for sure. Yeah.
And David Fincher, man. God, he's good in Gone Girl. God, I love Gone Girl so much.
Exactly. Really well done on that. You mentioned that monologue. If and when this comes up award season, that's the scene that plays. But the thing about that, Kent, is like, I love a scene where I know I am being manipulated and I'm just freaking into it. I'm just like, yep, let's go. Like, I'm totally fine to be manipulated, because
when he turns off so the presentation,
so good.
Oh my gosh, that was so amazing. I was like, God, that's exactly what everyone was thinking. And he's like, I can't do it. Nope. Nope. And he just wings it. And gosh, that's like
big,
a stand-up.
Big Don Draper vibes. I loved it. Yeah.
Very, for sure.
Very the good. Carousel. Yeah. That was awesome.
So good.
Viola Davis was incredible. She's always incredible. Her screen presence is remarkable. I was very touched by the way that the movie used her, and then like the quick asides to James Jordan, his dad, and, you know, knowing how that played out and how important his dad was to Michael, and everything that came out of that with his murder and stuff like that. I thought that was very sweetly, kind of classily done. Just giving him a presence there without making the movie about, and I think in lesser hands, again, both of those characters could have been
sloppy.
really sloppy and could have gotten to a place where you kind of feel gross about it if you know the background and the story and whatnot with his dad. But God, Viola Davis is so good. The couple of scenes where the two of them are talking, just Viola Davis and Matt Damon, those are some great scenes, man. They those will be ones that I remember at the end of this year. And there'll be ones that I, when I inevitably put this on in the background and rewatch for the thousandth time, you know, as I'm writing or working on something, those will be some of the scenes where I kind of stop and really pay attention, because they're the energy and the focus there is so good.
Something else that stood out to me about that, Brian, is she calls Sonny to say, all right, we're going with Nike, and you know, he's fist pumping and everything. And then you have this almost epilogue tension scene with her saying, but we want, you know, a percentage of the shoe. And then you have this other whole tension that plays out. It's like, man, could this sideline the deal? And you're thinking again, could he not go with Nike? This is amazing. They pulled it over on us again.
Yeah,
I liked that last little struggle at the end, because it very well could have ended. She calls up, oh, we got the deal, and then everyone's high fiving and credits roll.
Sure,
and that. But I liked that one. Oh, we're not done yet. One more thing at the very end.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and how that plays into student athletes today, and you know, people getting credit for their own name and image and all that. Mm-hmm. So,
Oh yeah,
I liked how they played that.
It created like a whole economy. Not just a shoe.
And Sonny Vaccaro's involvement in that was a nice aside too.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. Very well done. Very well done overall. An enjoyable movie. Making a movie that I think can play to a lot of audiences with varying levels of interest in the sport and the sports business and industry and stuff, I think is a really successful. Like I'm genuinely impressed by the way this whole thing came together and was done. So I don't have anything else. You guys got anything you want to add, or we want to grade this thing and do we?
Just a small thing is, I guess Nike was okay with this being called Air. I guess they don't own the rights to that in a basketball context. That surprised me.
Sure.
And they couldn't put Michael Jordan's name anywhere in it, obviously. So it's courting a legend. They could have just called this thing Air instead of courting a legend.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That's good. Good. Good little montage at the beginning there. Good. I would say this also did a pretty solid job of making it very clear that this is 1984 without like just hammering you over the head with 1984 references.
Yeah, there was a lot of that, but like it was done in such a fun way. It was honestly like, I feel like they actually did hammer it. I'm not arguing with you. I think the feeling kind of out of it's right, but like they did hammer it home, and it was done in such a like funny, elegant way that it wasn't annoying.
Yeah,
it was all like jokes, like this is going to be funny in 30 years, you know, but they don't know it now, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, I guess what I would say is I felt like everything was done either organically or very funny to where you're like, yeah, you will allow it, because it wasn't just like, okay, we get it. Like this is the 80s, we're rolling our eyes about it. I thought that was.
Coke
that was strong.
Was so good back then. All right, let's grade it.
Yeah. Okay. For me, I'm going to give it a straight A, and I think we'll be contender at the end of the year, which is always good. Always good to say in April. RB, what about you? What's your grade?
Yeah, A for me as well. I mean, I could see some of the other Affleck stuff has grown to my estimation the more I rewatch I was talking about earlier. So it could totally be an A+ in 4 years from now. Like, I liked it that much, but it's a solid A for me right now.
Okay. Kent? I like that. I'm with you. Kent, what about you?
Yeah, solid A for me, and forgot to mention the needle drops. Some great ones.
Yeah.
REO Speedwagon, nice little Dire Straits at the beginning.
A lot of violent things.
Can't go wrong with some Mark Knopfler guitar to start off a movie. Good.
Yeah. Yeah. Good needle drops that weren't like most of them. There were a few that were Sympathy for the Devil level, but for the most part, you know, Blister in the Sun, like that's not necessarily a deep cut, but that's not a major.
Very odd. I was like, was that out in 84? Do they care?
Yeah, I did the exact same thing. I was like, that feels anachronistic. Nope, came out in 83. I looked it up like during the movie. Like, okay,
wow, right, I would have thought like 95.
Yeah. I mean, Violent Femmes has such a weird career that they have had these weird pockets of.
I just heard that song so much, quote unquote, in the mid 90s on the radio.
Stuff in the mid 90s. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. All right, Kent, did we get your grade? I'm sorry.
Yeah, A for me.
Okay, 3 A's. Love it. Solid movie. Had a good time with it. This will. I think this definitely comes up again at the end of the year, in some capacity. So
I hope it doesn't.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Rockstar of the year. Yeah,
be great. Be great if this was not in a top 13 or 14 movies of the year. That'd be awesome. That was a Bill Simmons-y kind of way to put that. So, you know, I did have chicken parm this week, so
okay, it happens.
Yeah, it happens. It's the best. Contagious.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, let's do a quick weekly recommends.
Weekly recommends.
Kent, I'm coming to you first. What is your weekly recommend?
Total guilty pleasure, turn off your brain type show.
Love is blind.
No, but did you guys experience the live stream thing? Because I have I'm married to someone who really wanted to watch the season finale, reunion, whatever it was on Netflix, and they completely crapped the bed, and it didn't work at all.
The first time as Netflix starts experimenting with live, right? With
they did the Chris Rock thing live, and that worked.
I don't think the interest high.
What was? Yeah, I think the demand was too high for this. They didn't calculate the server usage correctly, and it never once worked. And I woke up the next morning and they lost $1 billion in the stock market. So how'd you like to be that guy showing up to the office the next morning? At least we weren't him. So that's nice. That's not the recommend though. That's a good one. I've heard that's a good turn off your brain show. A lot of friends are into that
big
one.
Big player in my house, but I
watched a couple seasons ago. I think it was the first season. I watched a little bit of it. I was like, this is just
love
wild.
The concept. I'm a big guy on these dumb reality shows. I'm like, yeah, great gag. Love the gag on this. I cannot watch.
Yeah, no chance. Yeah.
But I'm here for it. I'm so glad you've got a great racket going. Like, keep doing what you're doing, but I'm out. Yeah. That's kind of how I am.
But I think once you're in with the first episode, like, it takes over you.
Sure. No, I get it.
Pulls you. You want to know what happens to these
people. No judgment.
Yes. But anyway, my recommend is Doomsday Preppers, guys. You watch this?
Oh, nice.
Total guilty pleasure.
Ellen and I talked about this on like one of the very first episodes in the pandemic where I was doing like the daily recommend thing. This was her rec, and this is a great call, Kit. This is such a...
Have you watched it?
Yeah, I'm like, I haven't seen... It doesn't hit the completionist in my brain. It's like, oh, that's on. I can throw that on or... I mean, like, you
this
know,
is
oh,
such
cool.
a Brian throwing on the background
yeah,
type show.
For sure.
Oh my gosh. For
sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And the way they break it up, they have like four different people per episode. So it's not just like one episode focuses on one crazy person. They stack it pretty full in it. And man, it is pretty wild. Do you think these people are basically convinced that the world is going to end in some kind of way? So they're preparing their homes and families for such an event. And they've stockpiled food. They've built bunkers. They've got weapons. It's pretty intense and quite funny at times. So Doomsday Preppers, check that one out.
Nice.
On the Nat Geo channel.
That's good. That is a great background throwaway show. That's a good call. Arby, what's your weekly recommend, my friend?
Yeah, man, I've been under it with everything. So I haven't ingested much content the last 7 days, but I will say, I don't know why, that sounded really Canadian when I said that. I haven't ingested much content the last 7 days there, bud. But I will say, though, it's, you know, kind of been a little dry on the content front. But I did start Ted Lasso season 3, so woo-hoo! I'm a little behind on it, but I'm getting there. And so, yeah, so I'll just recommend that. It's an easy one. We talked about it earlier in the episode. So Ted Lasso season 3. So it seems like we're going down a good path. So I'm excited.
Nice. Good call. Good call there. I'm all caught up. That's about the only show I never get to watch at night of, because Wednesday night I have work late, and then I record my other podcast during that night. And so by the time I'm done, Lindsay's already asleep, but that's in the first chance we get Thursday. All right, we got to knock this out. I gotta know what's going on so that I don't get it spoiled for me. Okay, good. I'm glad you're catching up. My weekly recommend is a TV show as well that came out on Netflix. I think at the beginning of the year, I'm pretty sure I recommended this when it had its first season. It's Last Chance U basketball. A lot of people watched the Last Chance U football when it was in its kind of heyday a few years ago. Yeah. I hated that show because I hated the coach so much. I thought he was just a despicable, terrible person.
This is a college coach. So
yeah. Oh, for sure. But like, even for a college coach, it felt like ugh, just kind of want to take a shower after every episode. Cause it just was super, super crappy. Basketball one is about a community college in Los Angeles, East LA Community College. And their coach is the exact opposite. He's incredible. His name is John Mosley. Just great dude. The first season ended with COVID. Like, their end of season tournament got canceled because of COVID. And then they ended up not being able to play at all the next season. And so they had to take a full year off, and this is the second season of the show. And it's really fascinating to watch the first season where everybody on the team is somebody who is like really just desperate to get out, you know, and to, if I can get to a college, then I can get my degree and I can have a professional life after basketball's over. And they're all pretty realistic about that. And then this season, it's pretty clear that he got bigger recruits because of the show on Netflix. And so he's got like four or five guys who were all big, quote unquote, big name recruits at one point or another. Like, one of the guys on the show was a huge big signing for Washington University, and then he transferred to LSU, and now he's at East LA Community College. And another guy is like, his dad played in the NBA, so he has this like huge weight that he feels like he has to make it to the NBA, or, you know, he's a failure, and he's playing at a community college, you know. And it's interesting to see the difference between the difference for Mosley, the coach, in working with that first team versus working with this team and trying to figure all this stuff out. And so I love the show. It's really well done. Obviously, it's like Hard Knocks, where, you know, the cameras get everything and stuff. But it's their whole season. I think it's 8 episodes, might be 10 on Netflix. And it's so well done. And I think the coach is really easy to root for and stuff. And you kind of get locked into these kids' lives. It's just, and of course they do a great job of like, here's this guy, he's kind of a douche. And then 4 episodes in, we're going to do 15 minutes on his life. And you're just like, oh my gosh, this poor child, you know? And it just totally, totally turns you around, and everything kind of puts everything into perspective. But it's really, really well done. So Last Chance U season 2 on Netflix is my recommend this week. So if you're a Hard Knocks Boom. Fan or All or Nothing or one of those, it'll be up your alley. So nice. Check that out. All right, boys, this was fun. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. If you liked this episode, then what I want you to do is go to madaboutmoviespodcast.com/VIP. Sign up for our VIP feed there. It's $5 a month. You'll get access to another episode every single week. We do a throwback or a retrospective episode. This week, we will be talking about Forgetting Sarah Marshall, one of my favorite movies from the 2000s. And you'll also get access to all our back catalog of throwback and retrospective episodes, which is in the hundreds at this point. Tons of bonus content. Had somebody in the Discord today say that they spent the last few days at work listening to all our AMAs from the past, and which is a fun time that we've done many times over here in that VIP feed. And you get access to our exclusive Discord. You can talk to us and hundreds of movie fans from around the world about movies and everything else all day long, every day. So do that, madaboutmoviespodcast.com/VIP. Thank you so much for being here. We'll be back next week. I believe talking Ari Aster's Bo is Afraid. Stay safe. We'll see you soon.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs.
And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me yah-yah. The salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again.